Hello, listener, and welcome to Let There Be Light, the American Israelite newspaper podcast. This is Pamela Richards-Sakes. I am your host today, along with my husband, Sonny Sakes, who is filling in for, we're both filling in for Ted and Julie, who are not here today. Today is Wednesday, November 17th, 2021, the 14th of Kislev, 5782. So I want to take this moment to introduce my husband of 39 years as of 3 days ago, Sonny Sakes.
Good afternoon, listener, and thank you for listening to the podcast, which is bringing to you the highlights from the oldest English Jewish weekly in America under the title, Let There Be Light.
Here we are. That's right. So we are going to kind of go over the highlights of the newspaper today and then talk about really interesting stuff. I know you can't
absolutely.
Wait. So let's go through the newspaper, honey.
Absolutely. Let's go through the paper. The first story says the Jewish Foundation elected some new trustees.
Okay. That's very exciting. Why don't you talk about the people who are going off the board first, and then we'll talk about who's going on the board.
Yeah. They talked about that there's some new era trustees, and that's in quotes, who are coming off the board, and those are Bob Brandt, Beth Gutman, and Leslie Newman. Beth Gutman grew up in Dayton, as did I, is now known as Beth Gutman, but was known then as Beth Engelhardt.
Who's coming on the board? Rachel Faust, Dr. Rachel Faust, that is, Dr. Rhonda Schneider, and Adam Simpson. So I should just say really quickly, I'm actually have a connection to all three of those people. I'm really proud of them for the work and leadership in our community. Rachel was an active member of our Access Initiative that we ran through the Mayerson Foundation for about 15 years, and just so proud to see how far she's come and what she's doing to contribute to our community. Rhonda Schneider, nay Yosefat, who used to be, was my camper when I was a counselor at Camp Livingston way back in the day, and was our kids' pediatrician when they were little, and is now joining the board, and we're really proud of her and all her work for our community. And then Adam Simpson, who he and his wife and children were very involved in our Shalom Family Initiative for many, many years. And of course, Adam has played, he and his wife have played very important roles in our community and have contributed a lot. So mazel tov to all of them, and thanks for your contribution to the other three who have gone off the board. So what's next?
Well, I'll tell you, on page three, there was news to me. Announcements are free. It says that birth, bat and bar mitzvah, engagements, weddings, birthdays, and even anniversaries, you can place your free announcement in the Israelite. I didn't know that.
We didn't put our announcement in the Israelite.
Yeah, we didn't. We missed that.
Now that we have hijacked the podcast, why don't we use this as our opportunity to make our announcement?
I think we should.
Okay, so what is our announcement?
What happened 39 years ago at the Terrace Hilton?
Ooh, the wedding of the century. It was Pam Richards married Sumner Sakes at the Terrace Hilton Hotel 39 years ago as of November 14th. So we were, of course, children when we we walked down the aisle.
Absolutely.
But right here in Cincinnati, Ohio, and we're still here to tell the tale. And I'm very, very lucky to have such an amazing husband and partner all these years. And we have two great kids, Carly and Kevin. And it's kind of funny because Sonny and I knew each other, even though he grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and I grew up here in Cincinnati, we knew of each other through BBYO, which we were both very involved with. We actually never met each other in person until when?
College.
That's right. And he was in Sigma Alpha Mu, and I was in Delta Phi Epsilon, which was at Ohio State University right next door. And he was in love with a girl
roommate.
Of my sorority.
Yeah,
who had no interest at all
None
in you.
Whatsoever.
She was so not interested, but every time he'd come over to the sorority house, it just so happened. The doorbell would ring, and for whatever reason, I guess, Bashert, I don't know, I was the one to answer the door, and I'd let him in, and I'd try to announce over the intercom that, you know, Sonny was here to see, what's her name, Cheryl?
Cheryl.
She wouldn't come down.
Right. Who?
So I would stand and talk to him, and I thought he was pretty funny, and we seemed to get along, and I would run into him a lot, and I don't know, I asked him to one of our date parties, and he accepted, and then he asked me to their, which, believe it or not, they had something that was called the Playboy party.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell them about the Playboy party?
The Playboy party was a very sexist, misogynistic attempt by young men to have women come scantily clad with bunny ears and parade around the
Honey,
the
it was
house.
More than just bunny ears.
It was, yeah, just, it was not.
You had to wear like the little,
we'd
like.
We'd be canceled now.
Oh my God. Yeah, you had to wear fishnet stockings, a cummerbund, a little neck collar, and like, you know, literally like a one-piece bathing suit with bunny ears. Oh, I forgot. And we had to pin a little bunny tail to our tuchus.
That's true, right.
Yeah,
right.
That was great. And right. And high-heeled shoes. And we did it. I mean, that was
That's
the sick
amazing.
Part.
Yeah.
It was like, and no one thought twice about it. And the guys, well, you guys wore tuxedos, right?
Some wore tuxedos, some suits, but dressed, let's say, nicer than
right.
They might otherwise.
It was like Hugh Hefner was throwing the big party and all the bunnies were showing up.
Well, and that was the big deal. I mean, it was. I think it was less about what you wore. It was more about maybe having a pipe or having some accoutrement, carrying a like a glass that looked like you had scotch in it, that type of thing. Right. I think it was more the appearance than it was the reality.
All these 19-year-old pimply-faced Jewish boys.
What do we know about being sophisticated?
Yeah, it was.
Hell,
it
what
was,
do we know now about being sophisticated?
But believe it or not, it was like a party of all, like the party of parties on campus. And, you know, I got invited by a guy and Sonny didn't know it. And so he called like, what, an hour later and asked me. And I said, I can't because I've already accepted from someone else because, of course, I was so popular.
Exactly.
No, not
God,
really. But
ringing off the hook.
Let me tell you. Anyway, but I didn't go with him. So he had every one of his fraternity brothers hunt me down all over campus and say, oh, my God, I can't believe that you wouldn't go with Sonny. So it ended up that I just decided to marry him in the end just to kind of get him off my back. So here we are.
Yeah, she got me in the end.
Anyway, but happy anniversary, truly. I am
happy
the,
anniversary.
I am the most fortunate person on earth to have you in my life.
Pam did mention in the litany of people that we have in our lives, there are very many, and we're blessed to have a daughter-in-law as of this past May, also our daughter-in-law, Sarah.
That's right. Okay, what's next?
On page 6, we've got the Age Well model. And then on page 7 is the
Yiddish
Moving
column. Right along, as Ted would say.
Moving right along, on page 7, and I think people should read this, Yiddish by any other name, and he talks about the origin of the name Yiddish, which I did kind of wonder, and I assumed it came from kind of the Germanic, you know, basis of at least what I perceive to be a lot of Yiddish, and at one time it was called the Lashon Ashkenaz, because that was the Eastern Europeans who used that in other similar languages.
Yeah, the Ashkenazi tongue.
Exactly, Ashkenazi. Sorry, listener, but on page 8, there's a story with a blue box that says National.
Oh.
And this is about the Iron Dome. And I'm going to go out of here on a limb. And one of the things I found very interesting about this particular article is I recall, maybe wrongly, but I recall that the Iron Dome system was based on a U.S. system that I think was called the Patriot or something like that, the Patriot missile system, and then was modified by Israel. And this story is telling us how the U.S. is going to pay huge amounts of money. It says the U.S. brought 2 Iron Dome batteries from Israel for $373 million in 2019. The first was delivered in 2020 and the second in 2021. And then that Iron Dome system is now being tested in Guam. Why? Because the belief is that China could target Guam and try and injure the United States defense system. So that's I found that to be an interesting story because if you think about it, it's kind of a full circle with the U.S. Going back and buying a system based on one of our systems from the Israelis. So I found that very interesting.
I do, too. Thank you. And I hope our listener does as well.
I hope our listener does, too.
Okay.
Also on page 8, mm-hmm. There's a story that's titled, It's the Jews. And I just want to read a couple things, and maybe we'll talk about this for a second. But a woman comes to a school board meeting in Chandler Unified School District, their board meeting in Arizona, a woman named Melanie Rettler. And she says, the deep state, the cabal, the swamp, the elite, you can't mention it, but I will. There's one race that owns all the pharmaceutical companies, Rettler said. You know that you're paying for it through increase in gas prices, the increase in food prices. You're paying for this, and it's being taken from your money. And if you want to bring race into this, she says it's the Jews. She walked away, and the board president, Barb Mosden, rebuked her and said, comments really need to be related to what the school board can do something about, and this was not something we can do something about, she said. So please have your comments with something that is within our jurisdiction. The Arizona chapter of the Israel American Council replied later, our history teaches us that allowing such racism to pass unchallenged only invites more of the same, the group said in a statement. And the reason I want to kind of call that out is because I think that we are so often in our daily lives kind of, you know, stricken by these types of things or witnesses of this. And do we stand up and actually bear witness and push back? And I think this Arizona chapter of the Israel-American Council is asking us to do so, and I think they're absolutely 100%.
Well, hell yeah, and I'm sorry, this Barb, what's her name, she's the one that I think is even the worst offender, because she, as a leader, had the opportunity to get up and actually call this woman out publicly for what she had done, and it's ridiculous, and we don't even need history to teach us that that kind of thing can happen. We see it every day all around us, and this makes me sick what's going on at school boards and all around the country what's happening with these extreme people that are, you know, seem to have a license to be able to say whatever they want about whomever they feel like saying it. And, you know, first of all, Judaism is not a race. That's number one. But the whole thing makes me sick. And of course, you need to stand up. But then again, these days, when people are carrying, you know, all kinds of, machine guns and all kinds of weaponry, you never know who's going to, like, you know, open fire on you these days. So, you know, part of it is I'm a person who's always been that one to stand up and try to do what's right. And, you know, even I am fearful these days that someone's just going to blow me away and, you know, of course, get away with it, which is what we see all around us. People are just committing crimes, doing horrible things, and getting away with it left and right. And, you know, we've set a precedent, and nothing seems to be getting better. It's really sad.
But I do hope people read that that entire article.
Oh, but as Ted and Julie would say, that these views are not what?
These are only our views, the views of
the American Israelite, although I would imagine the American Israelite would agree, but that's up to them to say, which is really Ted.
But like we said, it's from the pages.
That's right.
On page 9.
Okay.
I wanted to point out that there is a picture of Rabbi Drew Kaplan, I'm sorry, and he was a guest, I believe, on a recent podcast, and I pointed out to you, honey, that I think it's really important that we tell our listener how he or she should get on the smart speaker, the Israelite podcast. What do they say to, let's say, their Alexa? How do they get the American Israelite podcast?
So here's what I do on Friday. Go to my Alexa, and I say, Alexa, play Let There Be Light, the American newspaper podcast, latest or most recent episode. So, and then Alexa just plays it for me. Isn't that fabu?
That is fabu.
So that's what you should do, listener. You should just say that. Like,
oh, okay. That was twice.
Oh, boy. Thank you. All right, what's next?
Very good. On you know, we talked about guns just a second ago, so on page 11, Israel police arrest 65, taking down gun running network. This is a JNS story, and I just want to read one component of this because this was shocking to me. According to available details, some 1,600 police officers, including border police and special forces units, were involved in the operation, which resulted in the seizure of numerous illegal weapons. Now, if you told me that was in the U.S., I'd say, you know, yeah, we've got one gun per, you know, U.S. citizen, basically. In Israel, I don't believe that that's the case, but here they are in Israel, you know, busting a huge gun running group. They talk about overall the agent carried out 48 purchases. These were illegal purchases of arms in Israel, and it says with a total value of some 4 million shekels, which I believe is close to something on the order of about $1 million U.S. It says so far 78 gun dealers have been indicted, 78. And I find that pretty astounding when you think about, a relatively small country, small population, but that large a weapons bust.
Wow. Okay.
He goes on to say this is a war over the future of everyday lives and personal safety of every Israeli citizen. It's a war against criminal elements. I thought that was interesting.
Thank you.
On page, the Jewish Foundation has I guess this is an insert, and in this it talks about something called Reflect Cincinnati. It says powered by the Jewish Foundation of Cincinnati. It says the power of Reflect Cincy is in the people behind it, a volunteer creative team comprised of underrepresented demographics who are responsible for designing a request for proposals, reviewing proposals, and making recommendations to the trustees. This team is a model of what is possible when new voices are in positions of influence and decision-making. So I think the foundation should be applauded for going out to the community and asking for proposals. I imagine this is kind of a broad call for proposals to address things and people in the community that aren't otherwise, sought after.
Well, I'm happy to see that the community's finally, like, really Picking up where we left off at the Mayerson Foundation with Access Shalom Family Fusion for Interfaith Families and Couples, you know, my concern was when the foundation decided to spend down and, you know, discontinue some of the programs that we had done for, I don't know, close to 15 years in the community, that a lot of it didn't get picked up by the community, unfortunately. And now it's wonderful to see that they are going to be addressing these populations. And certainly we had a lot of success with that, and I hope that they can continue where we left off. So wishing them all the best of luck.
That really is good news. And I'll just jump a page, and on the bottom of their chart, there's actually a chart in here that talks about the charitable purpose awards made against their what they call their spend in 2020, 2021 year-to-date calendar years. They talk about 2020 expenditures being $16 million and 2021 planned expenditures being $16.7 million. So this is significant funds going into our community. And, you know, I think I encourage people to go through the list on this page and really, you know, see where these funds are going. And to the degree they have comments about that, I guess directing those to the foundation.
Well, I have a comment. I want to say a special thanks to the Jewish Foundation for their support of BBYO. Again, it played such a significant role in our lives, the lives of our parents, even our grandparents, my grandparents specifically, as I've mentioned before on this podcast. But now to our children, specifically our son, Kevin Sakes, who recently took a role with Cincinnati BBYO.
And there's some applause for that.
Yeah. And we want to shout out to Deidre Perlmutter at the Jewish Vocational Service, who's also a wonderful person. And it's a great organization within our community who actually helped Kevin, place Kevin in this role. He was very involved in BBYO. It was a very significant part of his life and helped shape him, you know, and his leadership skills, and gave him a lot of great experience in those teen years. And we're thrilled to see it all come back full circle, and really wishing him all the very best of luck. And, you know, again, thank the Jewish Foundation for their support of such an important organization.
Let me tell you what they actually said. They said that, and this is just part of the Strengthening Foundation Investments, and this is one about Jewish Cincinnati Teen Initiative. It talks about the foundation also made a significant grant to BBYO to expand their proven engagement model to Cincinnati and to help spearhead broader and deeper Jewish engagement throughout the region. Ish and BBYO are working effectively with one another and with partners across the full landscape of Jewish teen programming. And I just want to also shout out, like my wife did, to BBYO, which has been so instrumental in not only her two grandfathers who were both in the Olive chapter of BBYO, the Sam Bieber chapter, but Pam, who was in it, myself, and then my siblings, spouses, both came from BBYO and were people we knew in BBYO as we grew up.
Yeah, Ken Goldhoff specifically, who's our brother-in-law. I was the president of my chapter, and at the time in Cincinnati, back in the 70s, we had six BBYO chapters, three BBG and three AZA. So we were very, very strong. We had a really strong region, and it's really good to see, you know, that the community is getting behind this, and hopefully we'll get back to our former days of glory.
And going back to our anniversary, we were to have met through a BBYO fix-up, and you know, that's it's near and dear, I think, to both of our hearts.
Well, it was a BBYO Bo Sweetheart dance when we were 15 years old, and a friend had met Sonny at a convention that regional. I wasn't able to go to, a regional convention. And I remember specifically in the girls' bathroom at Finneytown High School where I went, she said, "Oh, I met this guy that I think you would really like. You guys would be really good together, and I want to fix you up for the dance." Well, it never ended up happening for one reason or another. Somebody had to work, or I don't know what happened. But we never ended up getting together, but she was right in the end. We were good for each other. And
she gets credit.
But on our 20th anniversary, was
20th
it?
20th anniversary.
We decided to throw the Bo Sweetheart dance that we never got to go to. And that was our 20th anniversary party. And we invited all of our friends who were in BBYO. We even had a DJ who has a bar mitzvah DJ business now that was also in BBYO with us. And he was the DJ for the event. And we had a friendship circle. And we named the Bo and Sweetheart of the evening and did all the...
And who won that?
Oh, gosh, I can't remember.
Oh, my God.
Sweetheart was Pamela Richard Sakes and Beau was Sumner Sakes.
Oh my gosh, how'd that happen?
I don't know.
And
I don't know.
We raised a lot of money for Be Royal, which was fun.
That night, yes, we did. Okay.
Page 15 is the gift guide for 2021.
Oh boy.
It's leading off by the Adith Israel gift shop, the Beth Goldstein Designs, and Bell's House of Tobacco. I know a lot of people are going to Bell's House of Tobacco for their Hanukkah gifts this year.
They are? Okay, I hope they are. Well, I guess guys who like cigars, I know Ted likes cigars and pipes and things like that.
What do you have on page 18?
Oh, my gosh. Well,
there's a correction.
Uh-oh.
Did you notice that? I don't know if you saw
that. No.
There's a correction on page 18. Where it says in the November 11th, 2021 issue, on page 18, the letter to the editor at the top of the page should have been signed Dr. Leonard J. Horowitz, M.D., of Cincinnati, Ohio, not as listed of Dayton, Ohio. So I wanted to make sure that that was called out.
Okay. Well, thank you for doing
that. I'm sure Dr. Horowitz would like to know that.
We do appreciate it.
Page 19 has an information about the Parsha. Well, the Parsha talks about that Shabbat Shalom, and it talks about the Parsha, and he says that from Genesis 32, how Jacob struggled with God, and in having done that, gets his name changed. What I didn't recall is where that happened. It happened at Peniel. And it says, because I have seen God's face, Panayim face, El being God. So we want to just point that out, that Rabbi Riskin goes into that on the Shabbat Shalom and talking about Parshat Vayishlach this week's.
Wow, I feel like I've just been in Hebrew class.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable. It was like cheder,
yeah. Oh.
as my dad would have said, my long departed father.
That's right.
Keep Page safe. 20, you know, I wanted to talk about this, and you're right, you corrected me. But from 1871, 150 years ago, the editor of the Israelite was detained on the road and is most likely today in Evansville, Indiana, so that he can not be expected home before Tuesday morning. And I realize that Ted's not the editor, but that he is away. And I wanted to point out that you wonder, was that in 1871? Or is that even true today?
Ooh,
spooky.
You be the judge. Well, I happen to know that Ted, I believe, is in Pennsylvania, and I think he's fishing. So here we are. Okay, well, let me do the ladies' column.
Thank you.
Because, of course, our listener is on pins and needles waiting to hear what went on with the ladies' column.
This is, it sounds like it's interesting, the continued reign of the blouse.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, the reign of the blouse.
Unbelievable.
And this is from 125 years ago.
1896.
Now that it seems generally conceded that the ever-useful blouse is to have a new lease of life in spite of all predictions to the contrary. Like, why? What is useful about the blouse? I guess because you can open it as opposed to pull it over your
how you can wear it. So you don't have to have it, you know, it's not strapped in like a corset, or it's not, you know, completely molded your body, so you can take it off.
Oh, thank you, Donna Karen.
Wear things over it. Exactly.
We appreciate Sonny telling us helping to mansplain the usefulness of the blouse.
Read on. It says, "You have got your collar twisted," said a girl the other day to her newly arrived friend. "The bow is in the front instead of at the
back." Oh my God, was she a moron or what?
Yeah.
"My dear," said the other with a calm feeling of superiority engendered by the delightful consciousness of being dressed in the latest fashion.
Latest fashion.
"Please remember that I have just come from Paris, and whatever you see is right." What a, like, snobby, snooty, wow.
A little stuck up kind of a thing, but you know, I guess fit Paris even then. I didn't know Paris, Kentucky was such a fashion location. But,
Paris, you know. Kentucky. That is, yeah, there is a Paris, Kentucky, and maybe that's where she was coming from. But
I have to assume.
Good for her. She knows, man. And here in Cincinnati, you know, they say that everything happens 10 years later. So, I mean, what are you going to do? All right. Is there anything else from the pages that you want to...
I was going
to
comment on one thing, because I do think that the Jewish Hospital Association and the fact that we had a Jewish hospital... it was pretty amazing. It does talk about 100 years ago, 1921, Samuel Strauss, who was the president of the Jewish Hospital Association, were celebrating his 7th anniversary on December 9th at the Stinton Hotel. And it goes on to talk about the Jewish Hospital Training School for Nurses will also give a reception. And I just wanted to point out that I think we're very, we're benefited by the fact that there was a Jewish hospital here. It continues to be the emphasis on Jewish healthcare and the fact that we've benefited from the funds that come out of that investment that was made very, very long ago. It reminds me of the olive tree that's, you know, planted by the man. And the people ask, well, why did you plant an olive tree? Because you won't see the olives. And he says, well, my grandchildren will, or something to that effect.
That's so lovely.
Oh, that lovely wood.
Thank you. All right. In Jews in the News, I just want to point out that Paul Rudd is the sexiest man alive for People magazine.
Hard to believe.
I mean, well, okay. Here's the story with him.
Just because he's more of an everyman. That's why I say that. Not because he's not a good-looking guy.
I mean, he's cute. But, I mean, here's the thing about him. He was on Friends. And he was Phoebe's love interest and then husband.
So you're cutting right to the high point of
his
career. Yes,
and he was on Clueless. Right? Wasn't he? He was in Clueless. Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah.
It was also a Jewish girl, Alicia Silverstone. She was in Clueless, and that was a great movie. But, yeah, he did play on Friends, and so anybody on Friends is, to me, wonderful. So, you know, mazel tov to him.
Mazel tov to him,
and,
absolutely.
And Jewish boys everywhere.
Jewish boys everywhere. On page 21 also, and I don't know if you noted this, honey, but on November 20th, 1944, paratrooper Aviva Reich is killed. And it has a picture of her. Mm-hmm. It says Aviva Reich. And I'm just astounded by this because the U.S. has fought for so many years about should women play a central role and a frontline role in our military. Aviva Reich and two other paratroopers from Mandatory Palestine are among 40 Jewish fighters executed by the Nazis in Slovakia. Reich, a native of Slovakia who joined the Palmach after making Aliyah in 1939, was left behind when the British dropped three other Jews behind enemy lines during an uprising. So she flew in with U.S. pilots and joined her comrades September 21 for relief activities. They were caught by the end of October. I just thought that was pretty amazing given how maybe contentious it was to have women fighting on our front lines when in 1944 a woman from then just a mandatory district set up by the League of Nations was killed in Germany or in Slovakia.
Yes, very interesting.
Okay.
And now, please enjoy Ted and Julie's interview with Alex Gold, the winner of the Cincinnati Flying Pig Marathon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the American Israelite Newspaper Podcast and the Let There Be Light Podcast. And I am one of your co-hosts, Netanel Ted Deutsch, and I'm here with my other delightful co-host,
Julie Babs Bernson Brook. Originally from Highland Park, Illinois.
Can we just say Julie Brooke? Can we get to that?
I have a lot of identity.
I call you something else, but I'm.
We have a very special guest in studio today. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Alex Gold.
And where
he's
are you
very
from?
Very humble. He's yeah. A very humble guy.
And where are you from, Alex?
I'm originally from Deerfield, Illinois, by Julie. And
yeah, he grew up right down
the deer. Were there actually deer there in the Deerfield?
There was quite a few deer.
Did you see them when they're you're driving around?
Well, unfortunately, I feel like now that they keep developing the area, you keep seeing more less deer in our backyard.
Yeah.
coming out of the areas they used to hang out with.
Yeah.
So
why is he here? Who is he?
Well,
First of all,
I'm going to welcome you, and I'm going to welcome you to Cincinnati, and I'm going to welcome you to Cincinnati's Jewish community. Mm-hmm. You are here because you are the winner of the 2021 Cincinnati Flying Pig Marathon.
Yeah.
And
he's a humble guy. Look at him. He's smiling. I mean, this is to win that marathon, it's
26.1, correct?
26.2.
2.2.
Yeah, see, you stopped at 0.1, and they were like, well, you got to keep going. See down there? You stopped here. You got to go down there, and that's where the finish line is. That's what was going on there. All right, but anyway, it's really quite a monumental task to accomplish to win that. How many runners were there total?
I'm not sure this year, to be honest. I
know 1,500, something like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It was canceled twice. It was supposed to be in spring of 2020, and then they canceled it to spring of 2021, and now they said this is it. Because they're going to have another one in the spring again.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to run in that one, too.
I'm actually not. I have a big trail race that I'm doing right before it, but I'll definitely be back.
Let's talk about your time. So your time, according to what I found on the internet, is 2 hours, 26 minutes, and 28 seconds. And your average pace was 5:36. Is that your best race you've done so far, or what's your best race so far?
For the road marathon, I did the Flying Pig in 2019. That was my first one. The last time they had it, and I went out at a similar pace, but I was not prepared.
Okay.
It's hilly.
I didn't eat enough.
Okay.
And I hit what everyone calls the wall in marathons.
Right. Right.
So I was leading for like 23 miles or so, and then Jack Randall, who's now probably my best friend in Cincinnati, he passed me and he won. So it was a good first experience, but this was my fastest road marathon. But
So what's the difference between there's road, there's trail, and what else is there? There's going around in a circle?
Yeah, I've done a lot of trail racing in the past few years since I've been out of college. So that's kind of where my focus has been.
So let me ask you, so how did Jack finish this time?
I can't remember what his final place was, but he was running with me for the first half, and then he took the lead. He's a really strong runner, and he's run a 2:23, I think, multiple times.
Wow!
And so he felt the best way to, you know, for him to win would be to take the lead early. So, unfortunately, we were just getting onto Riverside Drive with 7 miles to go, and I was just thinking to myself, like, oh, this is going to be such a fun battle with Jack. And then he got a cramp. And obviously, I was excited to take the lead, but it was a little deflating for a little bit to have it happen like that. So,
Okay.
So, you tell us a little bit about your background. You told us already you're from Deerfield, Illinois. And you came here because you were an engineer, and you not only did you grow up down the block from where I grew up, but we also went to the same college, University of Illinois.
Yeah.
Oh, should we? Wait a minute. Wait, hold on. Okay. Just a little. This is actually, we could do this one too.
So you came.
Audience was out there. Okay, that's listening. Like, okay, well, you know.
University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
All right.
So I watched your interview at the end of the marathon only because we like to watch the Flying Pig Marathon, and my husband had turned it on, and I watched you finish, and I watched you get up on the podium, and the first thing I said to my husband is, when he said you're from Chicago, that accent, I recognize the accent, and then you mentioned all sorts of things that you were just great. So you came here because you are an engineer. Tell us about how you ended up in Cincinnati.
Yeah, so I'm an aerospace engineer, and my fiance, girlfriend at the time, we met in college, and she got a job at P&G, and then I stayed an extra year to do a master's. And I was originally going to go to work at Boeing, but then when she got the job at P&G, I was like, oh, well, that's okay, because GE's in Cincinnati, but...
And we like GE, too. GE's a good company. And Boeing, they've been having some problems lately.
Yeah. Well, I guess everyone in the aerospace industry has had problems. But, I was lucky enough to – it was actually my high school cross-country coach. His cousin worked for GE, and they were hiring out at the test plant at Peebles where test engines.
So, yes.
I had been a test engineer at Boeing in my internship. So they were like, oh, okay, like we'll hire you out here. And so I lived in Cincinnati after that, but it's about an hour and a half away. And then I started working more technical roles at the beginning of 2020. So I was able to live in Cincinnati full time, and we bought a house in Oakley.
So that's wonderful. So did you come out of the womb running?
No. When did you know you were a runner? That's a good question.
I really didn't. My older brother, he was really good at track in middle school and high school, and we were pretty spread out in our family. So
you're a family of three boys.
Yeah, three.
Poor
boys.
Mom.
My mom's so lucky. So he was the runner first, and I was really into baseball. My little brother, too.
What position?
I kind of could play all over, but I was a middle infielder. I did play some outfield, and I like to pitch.
Yeah. I was third base.
Oh, I love
Thursday. Listen, Ted love also Thursday. Was a runner, as yes. was my husband mm-hmm. Barry. So you guys all have a lot. And Barry played baseball too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So you started running. What year did you actually start doing competitive running?
So I think I may have done it in middle school 1 year. Yeah. But I mean, I thought it was fun, but I wasn't all that good at it. And then my freshman year of high school, I didn't have a fall sport. I was doing basketball and baseball, or I thought I was. And then I really loved cross country. Mm-hmm. We had an excellent coach, and I just fell in love with it. And I thought, hey, I could be really good at this maybe if I dedicated the full year to it. So I actually quit baseball, which was kind of crazy at the time because, like, all my best friends were on the baseball team. But I'm happy I did. I love cross country, but I do miss baseball.
So normally cross country was you'd have a meet against another team, your team against some other, or even sectionals was everybody, but it was like usually a 3 mile race.
About
3 miles.
Yeah, that's right.
3 miles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you ran in high school for Deerfield High School, correct?
Yeah. And then I ran at the University of Illinois cross country
track. You
were
on that team.
Did you get in? You have to apply, or did you?
I still apply. I wasn't like good enough that they were like coming to my house to get me into school.
Right, me too. Yeah, I was.
Now that they've seen the flying pig, they're probably sorry.
We should have hired that guy.
We should have paid for his college.
They were good to me. So ran there for 5 years actually, because I redshirted in my freshman year and then did my fifth year when I was getting my master's.
Okay. So when you win the Flying Pig, you get, like, I guess, all the TV stations, all the radio stations, and
the American
got some
Israel
publicity.
Life.
Yeah. And, I would think there was some publicity there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it because I feel like in a few weeks everyone will forget about me.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to milk it.
milk it for as much as you can.
What did you win?
Yeah. I didn't win any money, which some people are like, you didn't win any money.
$1,000.
I mean, to me, that's great because if they gave out money, then, guys like me maybe wouldn't be able to win. So.
Well, I think it's also, because there's a line between professional and amateur. And when you start paying people like $1,000 or $5,000 to win, then you're kind of like crossing that line from being an amateur to a professional.
Yeah, and actually someone was just telling me at work that they actually had a decision, many years ago to not have prize money.
Right.
And I think, you could say it paid off because I think they like how the winner usually has some tie to Cincinnati, either from here or whatnot. And I think the news does a great job of, making it like, I don't know, this year, the first 10 miles I was running with my two best friends. So that was kind of cool. And you wouldn't really get that.
And you answered all the questions correctly because they said, what are you going to do after this? And you said, I'm going to Skyline. So, and you also, you really were telling everyone how much you love Cincinnati. So tell us about your love of Cincinnati.
Yeah, where do you go running at? Where do you run?
So I run a lot. I live in Oakley, so I run a lot at Alt Park because I've got two doggies and we like the trails. And on the weekends, I try to go all over. I mean, I think the course itself does a good job of introducing you to Eden Park,
and
going over the bridge to Kentucky and all that. And I mean, growing up in Chicago, Chicago area, I guess I'll say, there's not as much natural beauty. So I really enjoy the hills here, and I think there's a great running community.
So I'll get you. So when we were on the cross country in Walnut Hills, we would, Walnut Hills is like on Victory Parkway. So we'd run down to Victory Parkway all the way to Eden Park. We'd go through Eden Park and around Eden Park and then come back and then shower and then go home. But that was daily, every day. So we would go, there's the president's place up, their section up there where all the monuments are and stuff.
Probably a beautiful run. I think those are beautiful.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff. So we used to run there.
So we are a Jewish newspaper, so we just got to get a little bit of Jewish stuff in there. Did you have a bar mitzvah, Alex?
Yes, I did.
And where was your bar mitzvah?
It was in Highland Park, I guess your hometown. Right. Solel was the name of the temple.
Do you remember anything specifically? Were you running at that time?
No, I definitely wasn't running, but I feel like
it was 12, 13.
I feel like I crushed my Torah portions.
So. Oh,
did
good.
You did you? Okay. Good. All right.
What was it about? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was the story of Joseph.
Great. Okay. So did you have a party?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Do you remember? Did you have a theme?
I think we did. I think we had like a White Sox
because you were into baseball. Yeah. Yeah, you were into baseball at that time.
Yeah, my family.
Were there girls there?
Yeah, yeah.
There was girls there. Okay. Now, did you get it? You know, I mean,
yeah, the snowball dance probably.
Snowball. He had to have a date. I mean, a dance with one of these young ladies, I would think, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that's always a good thing. Girlfriend at the time,
or a girlfriend at the time. Okay,
quote unquote girlfriend.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, Alex, back to running.
Yes.
Of all the races you've done, what has been your most memorable race?
Oh, I mean, they're all memorable for different reasons, right? Like some for, you know, the camaraderie of teammates, some right. for the scenery, like some of the 100-mile races I've done in Utah. I mean, you know, you.
It's not like that's like all day. That's like
it's all day.
Like 8 hours of running.
Oh, it's like 20 hours of running.
20 hours.
Wow. Yeah, because you go through the mountains and everything too. So
you get to take a little break during that time, or is it just
if you want to? But it counts in your
okay. Okay. Time. You get like an hour off. Okay, I'm taking an hour off. Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Forrest Gump when he ran forever.
Yeah.
Yes, he just kept running.
And how do you, what do you think about when you're on some of these runs? Because some of them, they don't let you have any music, so you have you have to actually listen to your own thoughts.
Yeah, well, I actually never run with music.
Wow.
Running's a really spiritual time for me, and I think that, I mean.
Those endorphins kick in, yeah, and you're kind of like, you know, get that, yeah, I know,
I mean,
I've
you
been
could
there.
Say I'm a bit of an addict, but it I is, think it's yeah, a healthy uh-huh. addiction, and it I, is. Uh-huh. I, you know, if I'm running alone, I think about, you know, some things, but sometimes I'm running with friends and, you know, it's
you're just chatting.
Yeah. You could be running with someone who it's impossible to have a conversation with them normally, yes. but when you're running, it just flows. And, I really love running with my dogs.
Well, that's
they don't talk back.
No, they don't.
They bark. And
are they big dogs?
So we have, one who's mostly lab and she's about, maybe 60 pounds, and then one is only 22 pounds. She's like a mixture of everything from Golden Retriever to Pomeranian.
Pomeranian.
But, yeah, they're both just, like, excellent runners, I think probably because of I trained them a
you
little
trained
bit.
You trained them. And you're also doing a little coaching on the side, too, correct?
Yeah, I am, yeah. So I when I worked at Peebles, I coached the high school team out there. There's not a whole lot to do out there. And
except
so I
run.
got really into running and coaching. And we actually, it was just a crazy time. We had five girls on the team. It's a really small school, but we made it to the state championship.
Oh, wow.
Normally you have seven on the team, but only five people score. So we had the minimum to score and we made it to state. It was
That's
really
wonderful.
Cool.
So do you have any advice for those who may be wanting to take up the sport?
Oh, yeah. So I mean, I kind of train my dogs the same way, but I think a lot of people think that their body isn't made for running or like, oh, I've tried running, but this hurts or that hurts.
Right.
And they're genuine, and I totally understand that. But I've helped several people that thought that, you know, they told me without a doubt their body could not run. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to start off slow and build really gradually. And I even tell people to, you know, go on a minute, off a minute, on a minute, off. Even if you're not tired at the end of the minute, because you might hurt your shins or your foot, you got to let those muscles get used to what is a different type of stress.
Usage.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just say, believe in yourself, be patient with yourself, and take it really, really slow. And reach out if you have any questions.
That's cool. And
that's great advice. Good advice.
Maybe you'll start running again.
I Never know.
You never know.
Just never know. Right? Well, I've got arthritis in certain joints.
Okay.
And they, like, hurt. What can I tell you?
So, what's the best thing about Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, coming from Chicago, I really like the size of Cincinnati. I love Chicago, but I think it's really easy to find your community here. And I just love the hills and the beauty of it and how everyone kind of just, you know, feels camaraderie from being from Cincinnati. You talk to people like, when I moved here, everyone from here is just so passionate about it.
Well, we're thrilled that you're here in Cincinnati, and it's nice to have a Lonsman for me from the Chicago
area. You did a little Jewish geography, too.
Yeah,
you
know? we found out that we have some people we know in common, and I'm sure if I ever met your parents, there'd even be more that we would know in common. Mm-hmm. Now, you may not have won a whole lot other than a beautiful jacket from the Cincinnati Flying Pig, but you did win a subscription to the American Israelite for being the winner, and it will be delivered to your house as soon as the labels start getting produced.
Thank you so much.
Couple of weeks. No, and anytime you want to stop in and say hello, come on back, you know. And any way we can help you, just let me know.
Thank you, guys.
Because you have a very bright future. You really do. You don't realize it now, but you do. Winning that race is going to it's gonna help you in a lot of ways. It really will. You don't see it now, but it will help quite a bit.
And we're really honored that you gave us time today to get to know you and spread the joy of the Cincinnati Flying Pig. And we're so proud of you here at the American Israel. And I know the entire Jewish community is with us.
And the whole Jewish community can benefit from him. He's a great benefit to this community.
So
really thank you. That really means a lot.
Yeah, it does.
And
yeah.
Thank you for joining us. Right. And this was a special edition bonus interview from the American Israelite of Alex Gold, the winner of the 2021 Cincinnati Flying Pig Marathon.
Hey, thanks for a great interview. Now back to our podcast.
All right. So anything else? Oh, you wanted to say something about Mark's Hot Bagels.
Yeah.
Their renovation is going to be on delay.
I guess it's delayed. You know, we got these supply chain issues, and so I guess their new look is caught on the waterfront somewhere in a shipping container coming from somewhere. But we do have availability for your Hanukkah orders. So they talk about, Bob Wilhelm, he talks about how Mark's Hot Bagels is ready for your orders, and you should put them in for Hanukkah now, and we're going to get to that in just a second. In fact, we can jump to it unless you have a comment.
Well, just in other Jewish food-related news, I want to say that Cafe Alma has been doing some pop-ups in Pleasant Ridge in their parking lot, and they're selling out left and right an hour into it. The food's amazing, and I believe they're going to be opening to the public the first of the year.
Right around the first of the year, I was told.
Yeah, and it's going to be kosher, and it's a brunch, a Mediterranean brunch restaurant that'll be open for breakfast and lunch and brunch.
And I've, too, been to some of those pop-ups, and I thought one of the fun things in the second pop-up was that they had other vendors also. It was like a small, I wouldn't call it necessarily a farmer's market, but it was like a little small market. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it really was. And it was an opportunity to just kind of hang out with friends and, you know, visit with people. And the weather was mild and beautiful. So anyway, it's wonderful to have so many kosher options happening here in Cincinnati. So Mark's Hot Bagels and Cafe Alma. I'm sure we would welcome more to come on the scene so that we can continue to increase our overall Jewish population here in Cincinnati and give lots of great options. So
it's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Page 24, incidentally, Iris.
Oh, yeah.
The December Dilemma. Irish pastor columnist talks about things that happen the holidays in December and kind of the confusion and issues that rain down on us during that period of time. And I just wanted to point out that this year, because of a quirk of the or our calendar, we are so early that Hanukkah actually begins in November. So while it still is pretty much a December dilemma, you could look at it as at least a dilemma that begins this year in November.
Oh my God.
I don't know if anybody really cares or our listener.
Well, our listener does not care, but I will say that Iris Pastor is amazing. She's like so just fun and funky and amazing and just lives every moment to its fullest. And I, you know, have known Iris over the years, and we, she helped co-host the podcast a few, I guess, months ago, over the summer. And she's just such a ray of sunshine. And, we're so lucky to be able to have her column run in the Israelite.
Can you believe it? We're already to page 26.
I cannot believe it. Unbelievable. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, listener, but we're going to be winding down in just a few minutes.
We're to our single death notice. Honey, did you want to?
No, after you.
Okay. Georgianne Goldenberg, in her maiden name, Nee Cass. Is it Nee or Nay?
Nay,
sorry.
I think.
Passed at age 80 on November 14th, 2021. That is actually our anniversary date, but it's her date of death. That's the 11th of Kislev, 5782, and we mourn her loss. Also on this page, there's a write-up on a comedian I really didn't know much about, but having seen some movies that include Lenny Bruce and some other Jewish comics, I feel like I know this guy. Morton Salt, comedian who inspired the likes of Lenny Bruce, dies at 94. This is a JTAO bit, and it talks about his passing on October 26th and the fact that he would often walk on stage holding a rolled-up newspaper and was one of the early stand-up comedians to talk about politics. And he says to end his set, sometimes he would end his set with a line, "Are any of the groups I haven't offended here?" So he was on Steve Allen, The Tonight Show, introduced Saul as probably the only real political philosopher who we have in modern comedy.
Okay. And also, is that Mrs. Maisel coming back on, the marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
I believe there's another season. So, yeah, with that said, we've got the joke of the
week. Speaking of comedy.
And I guess I get to read the joke of the week, and I'll do my best to read it correctly. I know sometimes Ted stumbles a little bit, but that's okay.
Ted, we love you. We're just having good fun at your expense.
Fish and sending them back. And
that's right.
Here's the audience for you.
Okay.
A couple went to see The Producers on Broadway during the time when it was the biggest show in town, when Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick were still in the cast. Tickets to the play were sold out well in advance and hard to get, but they were able to acquire a pair of seats in the 12th row. Just before the play began, they noticed an empty seat in the row behind them. When intermission arrived and the seat was still unoccupied, the couple turned around and said to the woman next to the empty seat, forgive me, but this show is so popular that we can't help but wonder why that seat beside you isn't taken. That seat, the woman said, belonged to my late husband. The couple expressed their condolences and then said, but didn't you have a friend or a family member who wanted to see it? You know, the lady said, she said, I tried, said the woman, but they were all sitting at the Shiva.
Yeah, all of the above.
This is from the Big Book of Jewish Humor, 25th Anniversary, edited and annotated by William Novak and Moshe Waldox.
Very hilarious. I mean, there was a boy in my high school whose name happened to be Larry Valerius.
Larry Valerius.
And we always used to say, very hilarious.
Hilarious.
Larry Valerius.
So. Well, listener, that's our podcast, and we really enjoy it.
And our listener is Larry Valerius.
It could be.
I haven't heard from him since high school, but it could be that's who our listener is. So
my sign-off is I'm thrilled to be here with the Joan Rivers of the podcast.
Thank you for listening, if you're still there.
Hello.
Okay. Well, thanks, and you will have a treat next week when Julie and Ted return. We hope you have a great week, a healthy week. We just got our boosters. We hope you guys are all vaccinated and get your boosters, too, so that we can get rid of this stupid COVID once and for all. And
I hear them always say Shavua Tov.
Well, but really, it comes out on Friday, so they always be saying Shabbat Shalom?
Shabbat Shalom, I don't know.
Yeah. That's what I would like to say.
Yeah.
Shabbat Shalom and Shavua Tov, and depending
thank you
on
for
when
listening.
You're listening. Yeah.
The American Israelite.
See ya.
Podcast.
Bye.
Bye.